shooting last night.
Look, Scott, being what we are is not without its problems. But it's not all bad either. You're gonna have great power. And with great power goes a greater responsibility.
I can look forward to a life of spearing full moons, dodging silver bullets. Well, thank you, Dad, but no thanks.
Don't believe all that stuff you see in the movies. Werewolves are people just like anyone else. The werewolf is a part of you, but that doesn't change what you have inside. It's giving
me creeps. Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus Teen Wolf movie retrospective series.
You still want to dance with the wolf?
Hosted by Arnie.
That boy's got werewolf written all over him.
Jacob.
He don't want to be seen with me, I'm a dog.
And Stuart.
You know, this family, we see him as part of our family. And see us as part of their pack.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
Please, Louise.
We hope you enjoy the show.
PW, you're going to be glad that you came to me with this. Yes, because with the right angles, man, we're going to turn this into something monstrous. I know the things you've done. You're a big bad
boy. I'd be hip to your sleep. Big bad boy. Spit my peaches and cream. Big bad boy. Ooh, I'm on the screen. Big bad boy. Today we're discussing Teen Wolf 2, as in also, not with a number 2.
Kids don't know the difference anymore.
Starring Jason Bateman, Kim Darby, John Astin, Paul Sand, and James Hampton as Uncle Howard. Introducing Estee Chandler as Nikki and Stuart Fratkin as Styles.
Not my Styles.
Directed by Christopher Leitch. This is the now playing co-host who's both omnivorous and bipedal, Arnie.
If this is some kind of joke, notice I'm not laughing. This is Stuart.
I wrote that joke down in my notes when they said that line. Hey, this is Jacob, the co-host with teeth from here to Texas.
And welcome back to Teen Wolf. They didn't wait too long, but my guess is that Back to the Future made it untenable for Michael J. Fox to come back.
Yeah, they had hopes. You know, Michael J. Fox, his star really exploded after Back to the Future, as I mentioned last week. Cosby Show also made Family Ties the number 2 show, so he was ruling big and small screen. They approached him for Teen Wolf 2. What he said was he didn't want to do the makeup, but let's face it, he didn't want to do a cheap movie. He didn't want to make a sequel to Teen Wolf 2 when he could make a sequel a year later to Back to the Future and make Back to the Future 2. And they hoped. I actually read the shooting script of this as well as an early draft script of this. There was always written an end stinger with a cameo for Michael J. Fox to come on screen briefly with Jason Bateman. They really hoped they could convince him out of goodwill to come back for a day and shoot it. What was in the script, it was cut, is that he actually went to work for NASA in the space program.
What?
And so during this movie, he was in space. So that's why he doesn't show up.
To check out like the full moon up close? I don't understand the space connection.
There actually is that joke in the script is, guess what? It's always a full moon up there.
I'm surprised to hear that the script wasn't written for him. Because it does feel like going to college would have been the next step for Scott.
No, they knew by the time they started putting pen to paper on this one, that Michael J. Fox wasn't returning. And so let's get another TV star from the time and another one of Arnie's childhood idols, Jason Bateman. If Michael J. Fox was the person I wanted to be the most, Jason Bateman was probably number 2. I wanted to be him so bad. From his role on Silver Spoons to the show that just made me obsessed with Jason Bateman, It's Your Move.
No one knows what you're talking about but me.
Yeah, I didn't care about Jason Bateman until Arrested Development.
It's Your Move is a notorious show. It comes up all the time. It was canceled not due to low ratings, but Jason Bateman played a con artist trickster in high school. And NBC got so many letters from parents saying you are a bad influence on my child, and my child is copying the stuff being done on It's Your Move, that NBC said, your ratings aren't good enough for us to deal with this shit. And so they canceled the show. Jason Bateman, Justine Bateman's brother, you know, Justine Bateman from Michael J. Fox on Family Ties.
I'm thinking that's how he got the gig, right? They were on the set begging Michael, and Justine heard and was like, what about my brother?
Did you not notice the very first title in this movie? Produced by Kent Bateman. It was produced by Jason Bateman's father. That's how he got the role.
I was wondering what the family relationship was.
It should also be said he was in a sitcom that was forever having its name changed. Valerie Harper of Mary Tyler Moore Show got her own spinoff called Valerie that became Valerie's Family when she walked away and they killed her.
Yep.
And they put in Sandy Duncan, and I think it was the Hogan family, and 9 other names too.
Yeah, that show only started in 86. This came out in 87. So that show was relatively young. But because it had Jason Bateman in it, I was a staunch watcher of Valerie on television. So when I heard Teen Wolf was coming back, if it didn't have Michael J. Fox, I was really happy that it was going to be Jason Bateman.
Can I also just say that if you were hoping for the Michael J. Fox, Jason Bateman pairing up, in this movie, it was delivered, but on Saturday morning. Teen Wolf had a Saturday morning series that ran 21 episodes, I think. It was mostly about the Scott character, but in the last episode, he met his cousin, his nerdy cousin Todd, that didn't like to have any fun, and hipped him up.
I remember there was like a whole family. There was like, I don't know, a niece that would dress up as a wolf because she couldn't turn into one or something.
Yeah, I watched like 6 episodes of this. And we were arguing about what is comedy last week when we were discussing Teen Wolf. This made me really aware of how unfunny Saturday morning cartoons really were. Like, I was watching real Ghostbusters as a kid, or Smurfs, or Shirt Tales, or whatever. And I bet they were all as painfully unfunny as Teen Wolf.
Nah, Muppet Baby still holds up.
Maybe, but because of all the clips in it, you can't ever find that show.
You can never see it.
Yeah, so maybe it does. I wouldn't know. But I remember this show being on in the 80s because I was like, I love Teen Wolf. Let me see it continue in a cartoon. I actually watched one episode of this on a Saturday morning and went, not my Teen Wolf, because now Scott being a wolf is his secret identity. And he can't control his transformations. The only ones who know are Styles and Boof. And Scott has a whole wolf family. His dad, James Hampton, did reprise the role, doing the voice of the father. But now he also has wolfy grandparents who live with him. And what you're thinking of, Jacob, is his little sister, Loopy.
He didn't have no little sister in that movie.
Nope. And she's too young. She's 8, so she doesn't know yet if she'll be a werewolf or not. She has to wait till puberty, but she just wants to be a werewolf all the time. And it's so bad because Boof knows Scott's secret, but Boof is still friend-zoned. The whole series is Scott trying to get with Pam, even though Pam is dating Mick. And so to me, Mick is like the good guy because Scott keeps trying to steal Mick's girlfriend every episode.
Look, I want to be clear. You continuity Nazis can have your problems if you want to. The cartoon makes way more sense than Teen Wolf the movie. Yes, if you are a teenager that is a werewolf, you hide that identity. You don't become a celebrity by it. So yes, it made sense that Scott would always be put in a situation and he would have this transformation scene. I got to go hide in the closet or something. I can't have anyone find this stuff out. It got a little boring. What I could tell was like every episode was like him trying to hide family albums or hide this identity. It was the only thing they could come up with until they had the Todd subplot. And I'm sure if Teen Wolf 2 had been a hit, Todd would have continued on in the cartoon.
Yeah, like I said, I watched about a half dozen episodes and there were some other plots. There was one where Scott wants to get the money to buy an electric guitar.
Because he's not Marty McFly?
Styles is often the problem of the episode. In fact, if Scott was smart, he should break up with Styles because Styles does steal that family album so we can sell photos of werewolves to the National Enquirer. And then Styles robs the hardware store, his dad's hardware store, to try to get Scott the money for the guitar.
This is what I'm saying. He stressed me out as a kid. He's no good.
Yeah, he is the true villain.
Yeah, so 6 episodes, it's all I could do. I couldn't make it to episode 21, so I didn't get to see Todd show up, and now I'm kind of upset that I didn't get to see Todd in that series, the big crossover of Teen Wolf and Teen Wolf 2. But Jason Bateman, he's an actor I do respect now. I think he had a period where he was really bad. The later seasons of The Hogan Family, I stopped watching. He also has come out and since said he had an alcohol problem during this time, and so I really think that was coming through in his performance. But these days, I think, you know, Ozark, he does drama really well. His big comeback was Arrested Development, where he did comedy so well. We've only covered him on Now Playing twice. Once he was in Paul, which I almost forgot about, as an agent searching for the alien. And then he had a cameo in Tropic Thunder, which we reviewed before we had the retrospective format.
I think you are forgetting something, which is very forgettable. So you're forgiven for getting it. Bates Motel. It was the Psycho TV movie.
Oh my God, that's right. I forgot he was in that.
Yeah, well, he probably would want you to. He probably wants you to forget Teen Wolf 2.
But if I wanted to be Jason Bateman as a kid, I kind of feel like I grew up to have a kinship with him. If you haven't heard, I like his Smartless podcast, and he's the producer and the editor of that. So he's giving his co-hosts, Will Arnett and Sean Hayes, guff about stuff going off topic he'll have to edit out and making sure they're doing their recording locally and things. I'm like, I feel you, Jason. I feel you.
Yeah, I don't think I really knew who he was. I maybe watched an episode of Valerie or Valerie's Family, whatever it was called at the time. I do have this vivid memory, though, of looking through the newspaper, like when they had entertainment sections and like full ads for movies. And it wasn't a full ad. It was maybe a quarter page ad. But I'm like, before I ever saw a trailer, I'm like, there's a Teen Wolf 2 coming out. I like Teen Wolf. I kind of know who that guy is. I'm excited for this because I'm still a child.
I've already mentioned that I got taken to this because I was trying to make new friends, and my new friend loved Teen Wolf and had the same feeling that it was going to be good because Teen Wolf was so good, and I didn't have the heart to tell him that I didn't watch Teen Wolf. And after Teen Wolf 2, we went to the mall and watched it. I don't think anybody liked it. I don't think the entire crowd. I think it was a universal hatred.
Yeah, I remember that movie ending. In one, I felt like I had just watched Teen Wolf again because it's the same movie, but in college. But yes, I remember feeling a deep disappointment. This was not going to be a dubbed tape I would watch over and over.
Oh, yeah. I saw this in theaters opening weekend, November of 87. Excited for it due to the movie title and the star. And I just remember being in the theater and having one of those realizations that I, you know, as a kid, I pretty much consumed all movies and just went, yes, it is a movie, so it is good. But once in a while, from Robert Altman's Popeye in 1980 to Teen Wolf 2 in 1987, I'd have one of those moments. Explorers was like that too. You mentioned Explorers, yes. Where I'm in the middle of the movie going, this is not a good time. And being so young, there was no option of me walking out. My mom was going to come pick me up after the movie was done. But I did not see this movie again after 1987 for a very long time. Like I said last time, last year, never thinking we'd cover it, I'm like, was Teen Wolf 2 really that bad? Are my memories perhaps jaded? And I like Teen Wolf so much. And Apple was having a sale in their store where, like, Teen Wolf 2, buy it for $3.99. So I bought it for $3.99 and watched it and went, yeah, it is just as bad as I remember it being. So I wasn't so excited to come back to this one for a review.
Interesting. My thinking was that, yes, Teen Wolf 2 was the movie everybody hated. Teen Wolf was the classic because that's what my co-host had told me. And then I saw the movie last week and I'm thinking, could it be that different?
Are we going to get a classic, Stuart? This is actually better than the original that everyone loves.
To preview my thoughts, I don't know how you could argue it's much worse.
Okay, I will do that.
Yes, me too.
Yes, I want to hear from you guys If this is so much worse than last week, you tell me why.
Well, then I guess we should start with a plot summary. Arnie?
Jason Bateman stars as Todd, a freshman at Hamilton College studying veterinary science on a boxing scholarship despite never having boxed. His coach, Finstock, now played by a new actor, bets his career on Todd's hidden wolf gene. See, Finstock was the basketball coach in the last movie, and he knows Todd is the cousin of Teen Wolf Scott. Now Finstock is betting his career that Todd will follow in Scott's paw prints. Pressure mounts as the dean, played by John Astin, demands a boxing championship, threatening Todd with expulsion. But Todd hasn't shown any wolf traits, until a party stirs his instincts. His transformation earns him ridicule instead of fame, except from Nikki, his loyal lab partner and budding love interest. When Todd wolfs out in the ring, his newfound power turns him into a boxing sensation. Fame goes to his head. He ditches Nikki, flunks his classes, and revels in shallow attention from two girls. But the spotlight fades, leaving Todd alienated and directionless. Seeking guidance, Todd calls Uncle Harold, who offers wisdom and boxing tips. Reconnecting with Nikki, Todd passes his biology exam and reclaims his focus. In the championship match against arch-rival Gus, Todd fights as himself, not the wolf. Gus seems to be winning in the early rounds, but Todd comes back strong and wins in a decisive knockout. Victorious, Todd reunites with Nikki as credits roll.
And as credits start, we lost all those cool synths, and we're going to get this alma mater song going on by a chorus.
I am so glad that we get this alma mater song, because this score is one of the worst scores when we have it in this movie. I looked it up. The composer, Mark Goldenberg, I guess he was a songwriter who wrote for the Pointer Sisters and Linda Ronstadt and some others, and he was a session musician. But his score here is so bad. I'm honestly thinking at certain points during the score, we're hearing the theme song from that Teen Wolf cartoon series. It is that bad. You gotta keep anything except his score going in this movie. It is one of the worst I've ever heard.
Why are you dissing the cartoon score? I can sing that one. It's a lot better than the hillbilly rock of the first Teen Wolf. You can't stand on higher ground and say that first movie had great music and this is shit.
I liked the synth stuff of that first movie.
Talking about the score, I mean, this has got Oingo Boingo. This has got some better rock songs.
Yeah, I'm talking about the score.
You like the beating heart.
I love that song during the transformation. Yeah, I think it really worked. And the music with Boof.
Yeah, okay. As if I know even what you're talking about.
You don't even know who Lewis is.
I'm talking to people that watched the movie 30 times. So, yes. You know everything about it. Of course you know every note of Teen Wolf. And somehow this is so much worse. If you say so.
I will say, as a child, I think maybe this is part of my discontent. Because now as an adult, I'm like, this is just a dumb plot. But, like, now we're in college. This is just further away. This is adult stuff. All this stuff about the dean. What is a dean? And he needs the alma mater to like him, so he needs a great boxing team. Like, as a child, like, I don't care. I don't understand any of this stuff. As an adult, I understand it. I just don't care. It's bad.
And I was going into high school when this came out. I was still in middle school, but high school was pretty close. I had sisters in college. They'd probably actually all graduated by this point. So I didn't know what a dean was, but I got the impression he was the principal. I got that much. And much like the high school party in Teen Wolf 1, making me nervous about what I'd have to do as a teenager, this movie, plus Revenge of the Nerds, plus Real Genius and others, really gave me a skewed perspective on what college life was going to be.
So many panty raids you got to fit into those classes of yours.
Yeah, blame the 80s. All the messaging was bad. All of it. Everything that it told us was a lie. And even when it's trying to teach us messages about don't do this, they really make it seem like doing the thing is the cool thing. But yes, going to college, again, I'm going to argue, this should have been Scott's story. He stopped being the werewolf, now he's going back to college, and they want him to be the werewolf again. That would make a lot of sense. So much so that I say, why have a new character? Why not just recast?
They recast everyone else, it seems like.
Yeah, why not just have Jason Bateman play Scott?
I don't think you can recast Michael J. Fox. I don't think you can recapture what Michael J. Fox brings after Back to the Future and Family Ties. I think it's just too much to go for. And it's just, I think this movie, I walked out of it with a realization of how sequels work. You either bring in somebody new and do the exact same plot, or you bring back the old people and do something new with them. And this is going to be one where we bring in someone new, but repeat beat for beat what the first movie did.
I'll say this. I like Jason Bateman more than I like Michael J. Fox. I think he is just, there's less mugging. The thing you get with Michael J. Fox is he always makes those faces. He always do the, oh, doc. You know, like, I just feel like, and you get that in all of his movies, with the exception of the dramas. He has a comedic persona. He does a shtick. And I do think there's something more natural about what Jason Bateman is doing. He's just kind of playing it like a teen movie. It's not a comedy.
I'll agree with you there. He feels more natural in his awkwardness than Michael J. Fox is just Michael J. Fox. I had seen Back to the Future by that point. Like, I'm like, that's a mega star. Like, this is some guy that I vaguely know off TV, but watching it as an adult, I'm like, yeah, he just seems more natural.
And I think that actually works against this character. Michael J. Fox, I was able to root for even when he was being an egotistical jerk because of Michael J. Fox's way he plays it, always being a little self-effacing, being a little bit whiny, being physically small. It makes him easy to root for. Here, this Todd is a nothing burger. I don't dislike him, but there's nothing to like about him. When he's coming to school here with Uncle Harold and trying to get a parking spot on campus, I don't think Bateman plays nerdy very well. He's in this suit, and I think we're supposed to think Revenge of the Nerds that he's going to school wearing a suit, and at one point he'll put on some glasses for one scene only, but I just don't find him likable.
Yeah, the cartoon characterization of him, he was a total Poindexter. I mean, like, every nerd cliche. And then keep in mind, Revenge of the Nerds would have been fresh in everyone's mind. You could have done that. And I do think that, yes, he's just playing it more like he's an average kid. The joke is, they have a picture of him. The dean's looking at it. He's like in a marching band outfit. And we're giving him a full athletic scholarship. He's getting a free ride to college because he's hired the coach from the Beacon Town High School. And again, this is one that's hurt by the miscasting. I liked the coach last time.
This guy plays it totally different.
Totally different. But the point is, if it had been the same coach, we would understand that, yes, he's betting everything that this might look like somebody in the marching band nerd, but is really a werewolf.
This is just a crazy plot. Like, what is the coach's stake in all of this? Like, why does he have to find a winning boxer? Like, boxing is just a weird sport to base your success as a college on. Like, you're going to pull some band nerd in and go, hey, you got a boxing scholarship. And everyone's like, sure, that makes sense. Like, this is such a bizarre way to get into the story.
That it's going to be even sold as a team sport. And we all got to box together.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
No, this is a total miscalculation. I don't know why they decided on boxing. I've watched all the interviews. As I mentioned, the guy who plays Styles on this movie, he loves to talk about this movie. He put his shooting script and his draft script online and talked about playing the role. And in the script, it mentions the dean was the last boxing champion in the 1950s. As he really wants to bring it back so he can bring in alumni donations and things, that the money is waning and the school used to be known for its boxing. But I think this is a miscalculation to go from a team sport like basketball to being alone in the ring with boxing.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a college sport. I know that it is, but it doesn't feel that the whole alumni would care how the boxing team is doing. It's just a really weird way to position the conflict here. But I do think, not unlike why we had, you know, the dance scene last time and why we had a werewolf at all, it was they looked at what was popular in culture. And we could forget this now. I wasn't on this series, but the Rocky movies made big money. And so boxing movies were considered successful. So if you're making a sports movie, You make it a boxing movie. I think that's why they went with boxing. And maybe it would have been funny to see Michael J. Fox in the ring. I mean, maybe the idea of that little guy there to keep him in an even more brutal sport. You couldn't have it be basketball again, right? We can all admit it had to be something else.
Sure, lacrosse, something like that. Not boxing, though.
Yeah, and I think by the time they were writing the script, they knew Fox wasn't coming back. So the thought of him being in the ring wasn't in their mind. But yeah, if you're going to tell the same arc as the last one, where what Scotty had to learn was to work with a team and not be a showboat, then boxing's a bad choice, even if Rocky does make money. Guess what? Major League made money. Go play baseball or something.
Yeah, baseball movies would have been coming in vogue. I think it was the same year as Bull Durham. They didn't know. That would have been the one to jump on, but also not aggressive enough. You know, I think, you know, basketball is very physical, and boxing, obviously, a very physical sport. Baseball's slower. I think it would have been hard to have a werewolf run the bases. It would have just been kind of boring to watch him hit home runs.
It depends who films it. I think stealing bases and hitting home runs, it could have worked.
Can't you imagine he, like, throws the pitch, the player hits it, then he runs all the way by himself from the pitcher's mound to the outfield to catch it, and then throws it for the guy running to home, and then he runs all the way and catches his own throw and tags him at, like, great werewolf powers.
That's what Sonic does. Yeah, I mean, it would have been as funny as Sonic.
I mean, that's what a Teen Wolf is, I guess. You could do everything.
Anyway, I get that you have Styles come back, but you get the guy that was actually Styles, right?
Yeah, not this guy. Like, I didn't like Styles as a kid, but I also miss Styles. I'm like, this is not Styles. This is a different person. I didn't realize the coach was even supposed to be the same guy, I think, when I watched this as a kid, but Styles I knew.
Right. You could totally miss that it's the same coach.
What's funny is, when I watched this as a kid, I thought it was the same coach. They look similar. They both have curly hair. And so I thought it was the same guy playing the coach. Keep in mind, I saw this once in theaters. I wasn't schooled in who that coach was. I mean, he went on to be a successful sitcom creator, but it's not like he was a star in front of the camera. But I knew this wasn't the same Styles. I guess they knew he wasn't going to come back. In the draft script that I read, this was actually Styles' older brother. But then they just ended up making him the same one, because they're going to specifically say, oh, that was Scott's best friend.
Yeah, Jerry Levine, who was the original Styles, was thinking that he had a career. He was in Iron Eagle, which was an attempt to be Top Gun.
Yeah, but he was in that right after this. He'd end up being a TV director. He made a career for himself in Hollywood.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he might have thought he was too good for Teen Wolf 2.
I mean, he probably was. Like, good choice not to be in this.
Chubby comes back. I mean, I guess that's a continuing character.
Which, is he a multi-sport athlete? He's like playing fencing at the beginning here, stabbing that chocolate milk. I thought that was his thing, but then he's also on the boxing team.
No, his thing is that he's fat because he's got pictures of food on his door.
He has a cooler in his room.
Yeah, he's always eating, and they've just got to hit that again and again.
Not just a cooler, that's bigger than a mini fridge.
Like a 7-Eleven like cooler that you put your beer in and stuff.
It's filled with, like, pudding cups and chocolate milk.
Yeah, do you get it? He's fat. See? This is the 80s. It's like, they just shame you and shame you relentlessly.
Hey, he's one of the only two people to come back for this. Him and Uncle Harold, so.
But again, if it were Scott, I would understand why Harold is taking him to school. Why Uncle Harold is taking this character we never met, who was apparently living in another city, to come to this place. You're never going to convince me that it wasn't somebody's idea to tell the story as Scott's story.
We never found out where Scott's mom, what happened to her. Yeah, where is Todd's parents? Is Uncle Howard the only male, like, father figure in the Howard family?
And he's just, like, changing in the car into his werewolf self. He's very comfortable with it. And it almost seems to be signaling that this person should be a werewolf. That, you know, even though he thinks it skipped his family, his parents weren't werewolves, that somehow the uncle knows.
Yeah, he's just saying, be careful with it. Some people blossom later than others, but Todd is sure it's not him. And I think they do drop a line. I mean, whatever. But that this school is near Beacon Town and that's why Uncle Harold is driving him. Uncle Harold says, I promised your parents I'd look out for you.
Yeah. Do you need the particularly since it's not his dad, do you need Howard to come back? I know this actor is desperate enough to do the voice in the cartoon, but I just think you don't do it, right? It's confusing.
Yeah, and the way he goes about, like, again, he's very aggressive with being the wolf. Maybe this is a, you know, it's like, cool, like, practice safe sex, maybe stay virgin longer than most people do, but, like, don't be a virgin too long. Like, that's how I feel Uncle Howard is. He's like, well, you're in college now. You need to party a little bit.
And Stiles being his roommate, he's worried. I thought that was an interesting thing. He's afraid that not only is this kid maybe a werewolf and not realizing it, but that Stiles could be a bad influence. And he is.
He has those Teen Wolf shirts.
Yeah, he still has the merchandise, and he's still plotting that this guy can be a werewolf. He's self-satisfied, and he's maybe to make him mad, to make him turn into a wolf, or maybe just because it's a way of meeting women, he's changed all his coursework into, like, French cooking and candle making and women's volleyball.
Yeah, this is an 80s comedy, Stuart.
Yeah, I get it. Be around girls. And so that means that this character is going to have to go change his classes, and we start to see changes in him when we have this mean admissions lady who says kids never change their classes. He gets the red eyes. He gets the forehead.
Kids never change their classes? Tell that to me in college. There was not a class I kept. I changed and dropped so many classes. I can't even imagine if you were locked into your classes for a semester.
Yes. I mean, the point is she doesn't want to do her work, so she intimidates people into not changing their classes.
And this is the exact same scene as Scott going to get that beer keg and wolfing out to get it. Like, it's not even subtle about it.
No, it's even the same line delivery.
I want a keg of beer. I'd like to change some classes.
I mean, it's the exact same thing.
Which is not as threatening when you hear it in wolf voice, like changing class, like keg of beer, like people get robbed for that all the time, like changing classes, like how do you make that scary? They don't.
But it does help that the admissions lady is Sister Mary Stigmata from Blues Brothers. I had seen that film for the first time around this point, and so she did come off as very intimidating.
And so she's going to let him change the classes because she's scared of that. He's just got to get a signature from the biology teacher. Professor Brooks, played by Kim Darby, I guess her claim to fame was that she was the child star in the John Wayne version of True Grit.
Is that it? I'd know her as the mom from Better Off Dead.
Yeah, and you two just named the two movies that are in the first sentence of her wiki profile. Those are her two claims to fame. Of course, for me, I always remember we did discuss her with Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers.
Oh, dear. I wouldn't know what she was in that, quite frankly. But she's the kindly teacher. Is there a connection between her and someone in the original?
No.
This feels like a new addition.
No, but she is going to be a wolf. So it feels like, is she part of the Howard family? Like, how far does this wolf thing go?
Yeah, she kind of feels like a mom character. The mom that Scott didn't have. But yes, that's a late reveal.
Very late.
Well, we see is that this is a kid that's interested in being a veterinarian, and she's going to be one of the many voices saying, why are you here on athletic scholarship? Because we all know jocks are dumb, and they can't learn this science stuff, and this should not be.
Like a basic biology class where they're dissecting frog. Like, that's high school stuff.
It totally is.
And this is also where he's going to meet love interest Nikki, who is played by an actress who's done very little else. It said introducing Esty Chandler at the beginning of the credits. Well, you can introduce her and then say goodbye to her as soon as this movie's done.
She went behind the camera. She's a special effects artist. Maybe she could improve these makeup effects.
I will give her this. She is the spitting image of Sarah Jessica Parker from the TV show Square Pegs. If you remember that, with the big glasses and the curly hair and being nerdy, she is just a twin for that.
Yeah, we get some early flirtation. They go on little kind of dates where they go watch quartets practice, and he thinks about leaning in and kissing her. And obviously, this is the girl. Yeah, you've mentioned Boof. Yes, there is a girl that he's going to like, and then there's going to be one that take away his eye, and that's not as well developed. I gotta say, we don't really have a Pamela.
There's Lisa and Emily. It's two of them now.
Yeah, they're hanging around the jerk in the Trans Am that took the parking space, but they don't spend a whole lot of energy on telling this part of the movie again. We're just not into Pamela this time.
There is a Mick named Gus, but I don't even know his name till the end of this film.
Maybe because one of them's named Lisa, but I felt like maybe Prince was an influence. Like, this was supposed to be Lisa and Wendy, but it's Lisa and Emily. They're, you know, two women, but they always date the same guy. And instead of just getting with the hot blonde, now you're getting to have a three-way.
Okay. You saw more than I did. Again, to me, I see disinterest. Yes, they are repeating the beats, but I can see that this is just not an area where we're not going to spend a lot of energy. They care a whole lot about Nikki, but we will never care about these girls.
And maybe this is trickier to do, but I feel like that first Teen Wolf, what really appealed to me as an adult, at least, was that I said, oh yeah, like this is all this teenage angst you go through about learning who you are. And maybe because this is about college, it should be about something else, but I'm just not hitting... Like, boof, I get Pamela, the hot blonde, I get all those stereotypes. Here, I don't know, they're just kind of bland college kids that I don't really have a feeling for.
Yeah. Basically, they go to the scholarship reception, and again, John Astin is there. He's going to, almost in every scene, be insisting that this boxing pick better pay out. Like, he's so mad that he's paid this one kid's tuition. Like, this is really setting him off. He's got to say the boxing team. Or whatever.
And of course, Chubby's playing the tuba because fat guys play tubas.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 80s. It's funny.
Yeah. And you definitely dance to them, right? Like you make young people waltz around to the tuba music.
Well, that's the thing. This is supposed to be that sex party, but it's just kind of a boring, stiff alumni party. Like what's the, again, as a child, this is boring. This is not exciting. I'm not being titillated here.
This is the only scene in the movie I remembered. If you had talked to me before I watched it, what is Teen Wolf about? It is about a woman who is standing there when a salad goes flying in the air and splats on her head. This is the only thing I could have told you about Teen Wolf 2. I didn't even really remember the boxing.
You know what? Before I watched this last year, if you'd asked me what sport was in Teen Wolf 2, I'm not sure I could have pulled boxing out as the answer. But I did remember this where... He's dancing with Lisa because the dean forces Lisa to dance with him. And we get all the stuff that Scott had in multiple scenes happen at once. We're going to get the pointy ears, the fangs, the fingernails, all very quickly. And then a line that is, I think, legitimately funny. Like the only funny thing here in the whole movie to me is when Lisa goes, "You're a dog."
I've been dancing with a dog?
Yeah. The fact that they don't get that he's a wolf and they think that he's like a Doberman man or something is legitimately amusing to me.
I also feel like that was the slang to call someone a dog. Typically a woman meant they were ugly and I don't know, I guess that's the joke.
Or a horn dog like that. It was certainly, he was grabbing ass there. It was, please admit that you see the sexual overtones of this scene, that he wolfs out because he's with the hot blonde and can grab her ass. That's why he's gone all his life so far, not experiencing werewolves.
He just never hung out with girls before?
Yeah, he's never had to do this. He's in marching band. We know what that means. He's a nerd.
The marching band kids were the freakiest kids in high school.
Yeah, if you've seen American Pie, you know one time at band camp.
It's all true.
Yeah, I get that, and I agree with that. And I also just think, there's a whole lot of myths that are always perpetuated by 80s movies that are not true, that jocks don't care about, like, you know, their studies and that there's this giant rift that you have to either be a nerd or a jock. All of this is to be challenged. It's bullshit, but it's the logic of this movie. And so, yes, he's the nerdy kid who now has the girl. And maybe now that he's wolfing out, he could be pursuing more women. Except it seems like it's made him unpopular, that he's actually ridiculed for being a dog.
That is one of the few changes in the formula here, is like Scott was super popular immediately when he was a wolf. Todd is not. Yeah, they're always making fun of him. Which I feel like that is more realistic if someone was a dog.
Agreed. We can agree this is an improvement.
Yeah, even if they're a wolf, I think there should be some level of otherness and ostracization. You know, I didn't want to get too into the deconstruction of Teen Wolf, but I almost could see that movie as a euphemism for race relations and how African Americans would be accepted in the 80s if they were good in sports, but not accepted if they weren't good in sports, the way Scott was accepted because he was a good basketball player. And here, yeah, a little bit of bigotry against the werewolf makes sense. I think it goes a little far, once again, skewing my view of what college would really be like when they have petri dishes full of fleas to put under him in class, but leaving the dog bowl out of his dorm room and the no dogs allowed sign on the door.
We think that this is cruel, but I actually think the deepest cut comes from Nikki herself, who is trying to, like, befriend him, is coming to him with a box of KFC, insists that she's with him because he's, quote, biologically fascinating. I'm like, ouch, you're only with me because I'm biologically fascinating? Because you're a biology student and you want to study my wolfing out? Like, that doesn't feel like love and acceptance. But I don't warm to Nikki in the same way that I like Boof, I guess.
No.
Nikki has nothing on Boof. None of these women here are actually that alluring. Lisa or Emily or Nikki, none of them really do I want to see Todd get with.
Anyway, you mentioned the African American experience. I just want to point out how white this cast is. Like, isn't it ridiculous they had a basketball team of all white kids, and now we have a boxing team all white? No wonder you're losing, right? This is ridiculous.
Yeah, but hey, just like Scott, Scott might have been ridiculed if he'd wolfed out in class, but because he wolfed out on the basketball court and won the game, then everybody cheered for him. It just takes a little while for Todd to get in the ring and wolf out, and then he's going to immediately be popular too, now that he's good at sports.
And it's happening much faster than the first movie. Can I at least give the movie that compliment that this is happening at the 35-minute mark, not the 50?
I guess that's a compliment. I'm not having as good of a time, though. Like, just one, these boxing matches, because it's team boxing. Like, the matches, they all get resolved within the first round. Chubby is just wrestling most of the time.
Yeah, picking up people and throwing them around.
And not to split hairs, but I was writing down times on this. It's 45 minutes that he actually wolfs out in the ring. It is a 5-minute difference. That is all.
No, 10 minutes.
5 minutes. It was 50 minutes in the first film, 45 minutes in this film.
The boxing scene begins at 36 minutes.
Right. Yes, that is true. But he doesn't wolf out until like 10 minutes into that boxing scene. It goes on for a while. We get to see Chubby box.
Yeah, it's a team sport.
Yeah, Chubby does like a Three Stooges thing where he pushes a guy into the ropes and just holds his fist out and the guy bounces into his fist. And Chubby even calls out, "This is not my weight class," and nobody gives a shit.
I feel like because they know that we know the first movie, they can make this thing go faster. I'm appreciating that a little bit more because I want to be done with this movie.
Yeah, except it's going to slow down once Todd becomes popular and has to do one of the worst song and dance numbers ever.
Oh my God, this is so bad.
Is it any worse than last week?
It is.
Yes, yes, 1,000,000% yes.
Do you love me?
No.
We don't.
No.
We do not love you, but I didn't love the Saturday Night Fever thriller shit last week either.
First of all, I'm confused to this day. When I saw this movie in theaters, I thought he was singing Do You Love Me.
I thought that too, but you could hear those vocals when he's clearly not singing.
Yeah, and now I've convinced myself before I watched it last year that he was lip syncing, because it's certainly not Jason Bateman's voice too. But then when he's introduced, Styles says, not only can he box, but he can sing. And so is this supposed to be him singing? And the reason this is worse, they do have a dancing double in wolf makeup here. So it is not Jason Bateman dancing. So the dancer can dance better than Michael J. Fox can dance, but this goes on way too long.
It's the entire song.
It is the full song, and it loses its novelty. The best part about this is the fashion. This is so 80s. All the women in here in their like neon tights and their polka dot dresses and whatnot. That I can go with, but this scene goes on way too long with a song that is way too old. I mean, that song was 30 years old at this point.
Again, what college kids are rocking out to this, getting excited about like doing this parachute trampoline thing to fling them up onto the balcony? Like, I went to a religious private university and it was not this square.
I had a 45 of Do You Love Me, but it was from Beach Bear when I went to Chuck E. Cheese. So, like, yeah, I agree. Kids would know the song maybe, but it is not. There was a lot of 50s influence to the 1980s. Without a doubt, there was a lot of the 50s that came back. But I do not believe that, yes, any college in America would celebrate this song or this wolf. But I still say he's a better dancer than the choreography of last time.
Yeah, they had a full choreographer on here and a bunch of dancers. It's a big dance number. I think they put more makeup into this dance than they did his makeup, because I think the makeup in this one is far worse. I think you could see the appliances on the face where they don't blend into the skin well. I think this is an ugly looking wolf.
And they continue to treat him like a dog, like Styles is going to play frisbee with him and people are going to applaud this like it is the coolest thing ever. And I'm telling you, Todd Howard, get some self-respect.
Yes. When he throws the frisbee and Todd goes to catch it, I'm like, he's not going to catch it in his mouth, is he? He is. But I'll give this movie one other thing. As much as I have come to love the music in the first Teen Wolf, there are two needle drops in Teen Wolf 2 that make the best music in any Teen Wolf. When you have an Oingo Boingo montage, Who Do You Want to Be Today? Not only is that lyric on the wolf nose as to what's going on with the character's arc, it is also just a great song, and it makes that montage of him doing a whole bunch of boxing fly by.
No complaints because of that song choice.
I mean, I'm not going to compliment it, but I'm not going to say it's any worse than, again, the music is better in this movie than last time. The originals that they had were just absolutely terrible. And so this is a lot more recognizable bands and songs. Send Me an Angel Later.
Yeah, I was shocked they were able to get that song on this movie because this movie's so cheap. But that song was a few years old at this point.
Yeah, it was past its sell-by date. I got a question. Not that there's necessarily an answer. But, all right, so he is doing better because he's boxing. And, yes, Styles is pimping out again. He can break out the t-shirts and frisbees and all of that. Why would the professors be giving him A pluses?
Because the dean is rigging it. This is an old trope of sports in college, is that the dean makes sure that the players get the grades even if they don't do the work so that they can stay on the sport. This happens in real life all the time, that jocks don't do the work but get the grades.
I understand that, and I had this false memory that like he was actually doing bad because he's just partying too much as the wolf, and that's why he has to take this final at the last minute that cuts into the match so he could pass the class, a trope in many other 80s movies, but not this one. I guess that makes sense, but those professors really seem to be in love with him because he's a wolf, as they're giving those A's.
So there's only one teacher that's demanding him do real work? Is that what we're to understand?
Yeah, she calls him out on it, and his answer is, I'll just drop your class if it's going to be like this. I don't need biology because I can be a boxer now. I don't want to be a vet. I'm a dog. And so she's the one teacher with ethics. If we had had one scene between the dean and that professor, I think it would have sold that go home a lot more, where we have the dean telling Professor Brooks, give him the grades, and Professor Brooks pushing back saying that's not ethical. That would have helped. We only get one scene with those two together, and it's way late in the movie. But early on, we get the dean giving Todd this gorgeous Corvette C4. It was the car of my dreams in 1987, was to have a Corvette C4. That thing is a sweet vehicle. And so the dean's giving him the car. And later on, the dean says outright, I'll take care of the grades, the cars, the money, the girls. You just keep boxing.
Okay, I missed that line. And the way it comes off in the montage is that the women teachers are aroused by the wolf as well.
Yes, that is how it plays.
Yes, it plays like I'm going to let this wolf do whatever he wants because I love him.
Yeah, I just took it as the dean was arranging it, but I had seen that in other movies and TV shows at that point. So I'm bringing in knowledge that this movie is not actually imparting.
But this is where we have that turn where, yes, he's starting to sell out his friends. I think it plays better here than it did the last time. It's more clear that he's snubbing, well, I don't know, you can call them friends, Chubby and Styles. I'm fine with Styles being snubbed, actually.
I just don't understand why Styles is turning against him unless t-shirt sales are down, because he's the one like, you gotta be the wolf, or you gotta sell this merchandise. He doesn't care about studies, but all of a sudden he's studying super hard for the finals.
No, it's that he's locked out of his room and that the women in bra and panties aren't inviting him in. He's jealous.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with Chubby, is Chubby gets out of the vet and two women get in, and Chubby's thinking one for Todd, one for me, and then Todd goes off with both on his own and leaves Chubby by the curb, quite literally.
I mean, Chubby, you gotta have realistic expectations.
Well, he could be realistically a wingman, like, for sure. He's built for it.
True. I mean, he seems like the bigger athlete. He's doing fencing, he's playing the tuba, he's boxing, he does it all. Chubby's the real winner.
Maybe he would have been the star of the third movie.
We'll talk about who that would be. But what I never got the first time I saw this movie, the third time I saw this movie, I'm going to completely disagree with you, Stuart, because his downfall comes out of nowhere to me. I get that Styles and Chubby feel a little bit left out, but when they're at the mini golf with Emily and Lisa, why do they no longer like him? I don't understand this scene at all.
I think it's his fashion. I hate his outfit, and that's, I have to blame it on that because nothing else makes sense.
Yeah. You know, if it's the Pamela rules, they never left Gus, right? They were always with the boxer. They never weren't with him. They just were trying to enjoy the limelight, I guess. It's as clear to me as it was before.
In the last movie, I saw a lot of people get tired of Scott's shit, and I saw it all in a montage, but I saw it. And here, Todd seems like the women love him. The women are having three ways with him. And then he's showing them how to putt, and they're immediately tired of him. And they go with Gus, who, he must be super strong to crush a golf ball like that, too. That is some freakish strength. That's some Ivan Drago shit going on.
It totally, again, I'm telling you, Rocky was a frame of reference here. And yes, we also want to point out that Nikki, again, we were supposed to like her. So, you know, she has these scenes where every now and then she puts on these stern-looking glasses and gives him a lecture. And at one point, it turns into a frog-slapping, frog-dissection fight. This is some kind of Animal House attempt.
Again, college kids.
Again, Animal House food fight. It was a big scene 10 years before in a movie.
I don't know. I see this frog dissection thing, and I'm thinking of E.T., which is elementary school kids.
Yeah, I did it in high school, but I'm sure somebody did that in college level.
Yeah, but they're not going to throw these frogs. You're paying tuition. Like, Joe Biden's not reimbursing your student loans at this point. You got to pay for this. You're not throwing frogs around.
It was also only like $4,000 a year.
Plus, the frogs are still alive, oddly enough. They seem dead at first, and then they're jumping around.
That was something they had to have filmed, because in the script, all those frogs were dead. But yeah, when you're watching this, some frogs are hopping around on the ground, and it is like that E.T. set them free scene. It is weird.
I understand that Todd needs to be able to call on somebody. I think Harold is a mistake. Again, maybe this is what they were hoping with the cameo with Scott. It would make sense if Scott, I don't know if he's an astronaut, but if you had Michael J. Fox come in, this is the scene where you'd want him to come in to give him some advice about how to handle the wolf.
And if you can't get Michael J. Fox back, which they couldn't, like, don't you give this to that Professor Brooks, and this is where she reveals she's a wolf too, and she teaches some life lessons?
Yeah, I think so.
Watching the movie this time, I have to say Kim Darby, when she's talking to Todd, she does reveal in her body language that she's a wolf. I'm actually really like that. It's something to pick up on only on repeat viewings, because you wouldn't know otherwise. But again, I've read an early draft of this script, and it was always Uncle Harold. There was actually even another scene when Todd was being picked on where he called Uncle Harold, and Harold was at the hardware store trying to tell Todd, you know, work through it and all of this.
Not your dad. Not your person. Doesn't make sense.
It does, because Harold is a wolf. And it, in the scene that I don't know if they filmed, but if they cut it, on that phone call, Todd specifically says, I can't burden my parents with this, and they wouldn't know how to help me anyway, because neither of them are wolves.
And Uncle Howard is also a boxer, conveniently.
Yeah, I'll show you some moves. This is where I really resent this. Okay, you're going to do all of this thing with, I have to be human, I can't use the wolf. You will lose. You cannot win this boxing match.
Yeah, if in a team sport, you can rely on your team, and maybe you have a little bit of talent to begin with. But yes, this is reminding me of DJ Jazzy Jeff, I think I can beat Mike Tyson level fights going on here.
That this guy is like, I used to box, I got some moves, and he's going to teach him some secret uppercut or something.
It's just an uppercut, and what does that have to do with being a wolf? Again, this is the same problem. My biggest complaint about Teen Wolf is being a wolf should teach you how to win that sport, and they ignore that again.
Yeah, that's a super important thing to underline. It should not just be a curse. It needed to be a life lesson. And they just, they always are like, well, now we need to contain it, and he can never be it again.
And then we're also going to get, I don't understand Todd's evolution as a character here. His arc feels too hasty, but he is going to go to that professor and be like, I skipped your final. Will you let me make it up? And he's going to pull an all-nighter studying with Nikki, where they take time out of studying to screw.
That's not that hard to understand. You don't understand that character motivation?
I understand that character motivation, but guess what? If that happened, I'm not getting back up to study for an all-nighter. I'm falling asleep after that.
Well, can I point something out? Nikki already took the test. She doesn't have to, like, help him study. She could just tell him the answers.
I never thought that it was the exact same test.
You think she created a special test just for him? Maybe. She does seem to care about him a lot. And again, it's interesting that you say that you can see it in her performance. I didn't pick up on that, but I do believe she's doing pretty good work, Kim Darby, here. She clearly has a protective, yeah, I wish it was her doing all this stuff and not Harold.
She should have been the Howard.
But it's right here after the test, which she glances at the test and went, looks like you passed. I think she's just gliding him by like every other teacher. Mm-hmm. There's no way she graded it that fast.
She doesn't want to grade another paper. Yeah, she's got to turn in grades now. Yeah, you're fine.
But right before the final boxing match, we finally get our face-off between the Professor Brooks and Dean Dunn. And this is where she's going to reveal she's a wolf. And I guess she-wolves have tails? Because we've seen teen wolves and there were no tails.
Mm-hmm. Something popping out underneath her skirt. Yeah. Nice touch. I think it was a nice little twist. But you're right. We needed to have more scenes between these two.
They're the best actors in here. John Astin, I always love him. I think he's just perfect for this role. He can play Gomez Adams really well, and he plays this silly, villainous Dean real well. And yeah, I think Kim Darby does well as the professor. If we'd had those two playing off each other, this movie could have been a whole lot better. You know what else would have made it better? If this final boxing match was half the time it is. Oh my God, I cannot believe how long they spend.
It's a team sport. We have to watch the entire team.
Yeah, that is the miscalculation here. No one is here for Chubby's match. No one is here for the nameless dude that's fighting nameless dude match. It was a problem with the basketball team, but at least it was the same game. Whereas here, like, we're just waiting for the main event. And we've had no buildup on who this Gus guy is. Yeah, he crushed a golf ball and he spun out his Trans Am. But they've had no real good interactions. Even Mick had more dialogue with Scott. This is undeveloped.
You know what would have been a really twist ending to this? Is if you go like the movie Kingpin, what if Todd loses? What if what Todd has to learn is that you have to be humble and choose to be good at veterinarian science and not be a champion boxer. He already told the dean this is my last match. Maybe he loses with dignity. He's certainly getting his ass kicked for most of this boxing match.
I'm not sure what even turns the tide, but yes, at some point they just decide he's Rocky and he's going to win.
It's Harold in the stands.
Yeah, he does that little uppercut movement.
He didn't remember to do that before? He needed that to be signaled?
No, he had to be reminded.
Oh, dear. Well, the concussions have set in early. I think we know that this man is not going to make it through all 4 years of school.
And after he knocks out Rick, they're going to replay the end of the last movie exactly. Lisa, Emily's gone, but Lisa's waiting for Todd now that he's the boxing champion, and Todd passes her right on by to go to Nikki. And if I didn't have a bad enough taste in my mouth from this movie, which I do, bring me back to the worst scene by rolling the credits to that awful version of Do You Love Me?
I cannot believe they brought the song back.
I mean, you guys are attacking this like it's so much worse than the last time.
It is.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, but worse. It's leftovers are the same thing that you had dinner the night before, which was good because it was hot and fresh, and now it's cold and gross and leftover.
So, Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Teen Wolf 2? Jacob.
It's weird how similar this is when you go by the plot. Like, that was my takeaway seeing this as a kid. I'm like, oh, they just gave me the same movie. But it's not as good. Like, Gus is no Mick. Nikki is no Boof. Lisa and Emily are no Pam. And these are not, like, great characters and acting performances that are hard to bypass, but these ones are falling short. Styles is no Styles. They made Styles worse, even though he's the same character. Chubby, he's still chubby. He's just doing the fat 80s jokes. And there are a couple of improvements. I do think, as you called out, Arnie, John Astin, I liked him more as the dean than that vice principal. And Brooks, she's a better Uncle Howard than Uncle Howard is in either of these films, except we don't get enough of her. Like, the things that are slight improvements, they don't save this film. They don't improve them enough. They're like, oh, that's a better idea, but you still, like, I think both of these films, they fall short when you try to, like, plot this out. I don't know. Again, maybe as a kid, a high school thing that seemed closer, that seemed more personable than college. And this gives me a bad impression of college. It seems really boring. What they do with this wolf, make him chase frisbees, like, I don't know. And then that song and dance number, that is a real killer. Like, when that happens, I'm like, ugh, this is not the movie for me. Somehow you made this about college, and it feels more juvenile than the high school film felt. So, yeah, this, don't go to Teen Wolf Also, or Teen Wolf Number 2, whatever this is. It is a number 2, but not the one you think. Not recommend.
Stuart.
Maybe it is lesser in some ways. But in some ways, I would say there are things that are better. I think Bateman is more enjoyable than Fox. I didn't hear you weigh in on that, Jacob. But I feel like the lead performance is more casually enjoyable.
No, I don't like what they do with them. So I guess the performance isn't there for me.
Okay. I know that I one time had a big argument with someone. One of my least proud debates was about someone insisted that they could taste the different flavors of M&M. That green tasted better than brown, and you could really tell the difference. And I feel like in talking about Teen Wolf and Teen Wolf 2, like I'm having that conversation again.
The one difference is you eat that green M&M, you become horny. That's the only way you know you had a green M&M, and Teen Wolf is a more horny movie than 2.
There are such a thing as super tasters. Maybe you were talking to a super taster who could tell the difference. And Jacob and I are super Teen Wolf tasters.
I'm not even saying it's not true. Maybe there is a slight chemical. You taste the dye and it has a different flavor. And you can say one is radically better than the other. I'm just saying to someone that is allergic to chocolate, which in this metaphor, I most certainly am, it's all bad. So, no, I cannot say... Yes, I was right to hate this movie when I saw it in theaters, and if I had seen Teen Wolf, I would have hated it too. I hate Teen Wolf, and this is no improvement, and it's really not much worse. Again, it just is more of the same bad idea.
Yeah, this movie is the classic example of that meme, let me copy your homework. Yeah, just change it up a bit so it doesn't look so obvious you copied. The movie's a beat-for-beat retread of the original Teen Wolf. From the glowing red eyes, to the wolf out during the sports, to the instant popularity, the inevitable downfall, and the final showdown where he plays as himself instead of the wolf, it's shameless recycling. And like most copies, it's a pale imitation. The charm and energy of the first film are lost in translation. And being a retread doesn't have to be a deal-breaker. Jurassic World reworked Jurassic Park with fun, if unoriginal, results. But Teen Wolf 2 stumbles repeatedly, failing to mix things up in meaningful ways. Like I mentioned before, the makeup is heavier. It obscures Bateman's expressions and makes it harder to connect with Todd as a character. The shift to boxing, a solo sport, undercuts the team dynamic and lessons about collaboration that made the first film's arc resonate. Todd's journey feels hollow. I'm not even sure what he's supposed to learn here. And I think the pacing's a problem on this one. The last one, it may have taken too long for him to wolf out. But here, Todd being ridiculed for being a wolf, the one new twist, feels rushed and poorly developed. And then that makes the rise to glory happen too abruptly. It's one boxing match, and then all of a sudden, he's lip-syncing at a dance party. And then the film never convincingly explains why everyone turns on him so quickly. The motivations of Todd and all of those around him are muddled throughout this film. And the supporting cast, I liked that in the last film. I called it out in my summation. Here, new Styles is about as good as new Coke. He lacks the charm and roguishness of the original. Nikki is flat and forgettable. The hot babes are underwritten, as is Gus. With so little development for anyone else, the movie rests entirely on Todd's hairy shoulders, and unfortunately, Bateman isn't ready to carry the load. He'll grow into a really talented actor in comedy, Arrested Development, and drama, Ozark, but here, this first film role exposes his inexperience. He doesn't capture Todd as vulnerable or make him a likable underdog. Unlike Michael J. Fox's shy and endearing Scott.
Oh my God, I'm dying. I'm dying here.
You wanted to know the difference in the taste.
Oh my God, I'm gagging.
Todd starts the film more confident, which weakens his character arc and leaves little to root for. Now, as Jacob called out, a couple of bright spots. John Astin is predictably excellent as Dean Dunn. He steals every scene he's in. And the soundtrack with the needle drops from Oingo Boingo and Real Life is shockingly good for such a low-budget sequel. But these moments can't salvage a film that feels this lifeless and uninspired. Teen Wolf 2 is a total miss, an underwhelming attempt to cash in on the success of its predecessor, and a very easy not recommend.
Well, on that we can agree. It's definitely not a good movie, and I don't recommend it. It's bad. The way that you can praise the green M&M and throw away the brown M&M, I just don't get.
Well, they threw away their own brown M&M because they were planning a part 3 when this was being made. And much like they didn't bring back Michael J. Fox, there was no plans to bring back Jason Bateman for a sequel. It was going to be a She-Wolf playing football, starring another TV star, Alyssa Milano.
Isn't that just one of the guys? Wasn't that a football thing?
No, that was an undercover reporter thing. But there was a female football player in Necessary Roughness with Kathy Ireland.
Okay, I don't know. I just remember a VHS box cover of like a girl holding football helmets over her boobs.
Well, yes, she was in a locker room, but that was not a sports movie.
Alyssa Milano, yeah, sitcom, Who's the Boss? She seems right for this. This seems, if right is the correct word, it seems like the correct calculation for pleasing this alleged fan base that must be out there somewhere. I don't want this series to continue, but I guess I could imagine that working. It didn't happen because this movie failed so bad?
Yeah, after this movie tanked. The first movie made $80 million worldwide, and this one made $8 million worldwide. The world was screaming it did not want another Teen Wolf.
They didn't call this one Future Boy?
Yeah, well, again, no one knew who Jason Bateman was. Particularly internationally. I mean, the $8 million was the U.S. take, so maybe they just didn't even release it internationally.
They sort of ended up making that, as I read, the Teen Wolf idea got reworked a little bit and did come out as a hit movie, Teen Witch.
I've heard of it.
I've seen it. You're telling me Teen Witch is connected universe?
Do we have to do that one now?
No, it's not. It's definitely not. This is the one with Robin Lively, who would also be a witch on Twin Peaks, and Zelda Rubinstein.
Yeah, that movie happened because they didn't make Teen Wolf 3. They said, okay, well, let's take our idea for a female wolf, and what can we do with that idea if not Teen Wolf 3? How about Teen Witch?
There's no football in it. There is a lot of dance scenes. If you didn't like Do You Love Me, you're going to have a real problem with the movie because it's a musical where there's like a whole like girls' locker room. I like boys. Kind of. It's, if you think the 80s are hysterical for their music and fashion, it's kind of an overdose on that. But I would not say that there's too much about the way she becomes a witch that is like becoming a wolf.
Yeah, I've not seen Teen Witch in its entirety. I kind of was interested after finding out the Teen Wolf connection, but what you're telling me makes it sound like I'm not going to. Plus, I don't have time. I've got a hell of a lot of Teen Wolf TV shows to finish watching by next week.
That's true. Yes, the franchise will be reborn in the 2010s. It came back on MTV as a series, and then in 2023... there was some kind of reunion for that show that they're calling Teen Wolf the Movie, and that we're calling the capper to Silver Level Donation.
Or the crapper.
You know what? It could not be worse. I don't know how you guys can hate on it. This just sounds like old men shitting on like younger people.
It just doesn't even look like it's attempting humor at all. That's my issue. It seems like a radically different tone.
Well, I don't think that these last two have attempted humor very well either, so...
Well, Teen Wolf 2 didn't do it, yeah.
I'm fine with the new direction. I'm more than fine with the new direction. If it could be a werewolf that actually changed with the moon or something, that would be great. Do that.
Yeah, it's kind of not that, but we'll talk about it next week.
You're already disappointing Stuart.
It is Teen Wolf in name only, though. It is not this movie. I remember when Teen Wolf premiered on MTV, and I'll talk about it more next week, but I turned on that first episode excited to return to the Teen Wolf universe, and I didn't even make it through one episode. It is not Teen Wolf.
Yay! Again, then it has a shot. It has a shot of being good if it throws everything about these horrible movies away.
Can't wait to hear you follow up next week with that.
I didn't say that I think it'd be good. I just say it has a chance of being better. It would be hard to be worse.
I'll agree, Teen Wolf 2, it would be hard to be worse then, but I'm still not sure what I even think of the series, let alone the movie we're going to discuss next week. Maybe I'll like it by then. We'll see. So, thank you again for your donation to Now Playing and joining us at the Silver Bullet level. One more Silver Bullet to fire with Teen Wolf the Movie next week.
And don't forget, on the main feed, Wolfman is out, and we're covering that Tuesday.
So until then, remember, never say die.
Let me give you a little advice. There's three rules that I live by. Never get less than 12 hours sleep. Never play cards with a guy who's got the same first name as a city. And never go near a lady who's got a tattoo of a dagger on her body. Now, you stick with that. Everything else is cream cheese. Great game there, Scotty.
Thank you again for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus review.
Scott, help me out. Do the right thing.
It's all I want to do, Styles. It's all I want to do.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating and putting out new shows without missing a single episode in over 300 weeks.
The fact of the matter is, I should be coming to you when I need money.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
It'll be our little secret.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
You can't face life as a wolf and expect it to solve all your problems.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
The Wolf House has signaled its pack.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Damn it, why do I have to be like everybody else?
That's not a problem for you anymore.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2025. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Everybody likes the wolf. All right, almost everybody.
Not Wendy. Wendy's gone. Not Emily. Emily's gone.
You keep thinking they're Wendy and Lisa. That's so weird. They were lesbians.
I think so are Lisa and Emily.
Okay, I'm not getting that.
Emily's gone, but Lisa's waiting for Todd now that he's the boxing champion, and Todd passes her right on by to go to Nikki.